Hour number two here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Willie Donick will join us a little bit later this hour. We're live here at Bridgestone Arena inside Jack Daniels Barrel House. Tonight it's the Predators and the Sharks. 7 o'clock puck drop pregame starting at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. So the game against San Jose. San Jose has been playing really good hockey. We'll get a report about them in the final hour of the program. Kind of watching some chatter up north in Canada. They're probably upset over the women losing the gold to the U.S., curling their sport. They didn't get a gold
it's
in.
It's been a rough 12 hours.
So now
Canada.
They have turned their attention to the trade deadline and some of the chatter up there as we are making it. We should have Richard Deitch here in just a second. The chatter is toward Ottawa's Erik Karlsson. So a lot of stuff involving Erik Karlsson. We'll come back to that.
Somebody find the eyeball emojis for that.
Yeah.
I mean.
And the Predators were also mentioned in a lot of that chatter.
Well, I mean, that's specifically what I'm talking about. Pierre LeBrun says David Poile at least reached out about the possibility of acquiring Erik Karlsson. Talk about an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
If you could somehow get Erik Karlsson on that defensive line, I don't even know why you would go after that, frankly, unless they're truly giving away. They're holding a garage sale. They're selling all their old lampshades.
Everything must go. 80% off.
Right.
Everything must go.
You can get an Erik Karlsson for a dollar.
Yeah. Or it's a smokescreen for other people to overpay for Erik Karlsson if he's really available. Keep
possibly
that in mind.
Possibly so.
Yeah, there may be GMs that freak out and go, what, the Predators are going to trade for Erik Karlsson? We got to step it up. All right, let's get Richard Deitch in here from Sports Illustrated, the author of The Media Circus. Richard, how you doing?
How are you guys? Erik Karlsson, by the way, I think is a free agent, right? So that's actually an interesting proposition for any team that wants to acquire him. Unless you're willing to pay that big money, it essentially is a postseason rental, but it could be a postseason rental that wins you the cup.
Yeah, it's interesting, Richard. They were in here on Monday night, and we got a first look at Erik Karlsson. He's a tremendous player. He's one of the top defensemen in the league, but he had an awful turnover. I mean, awful turnover that led directly to a Predators goal and an eventual Predators victory. So, you know, we get caught up. I try to say a lot of times because fans get caught up with when turnovers happen. And I got that. And I was like, if you broke down every player in the league in film when we had film study, you would see all the greats make mistakes. They're human beings.
Right.
And Erik Karlsson made a bad one here Monday night.
I would say just breaking. Michael Jordan's missed some shots in his career.
That's right. No doubt. What was your reaction? We talked about it at the beginning of the show. And I kept saying all week, I was like, I have a feeling. I was, you know, it's just I just thought the women were going to respond, and it was so cool to see it actually play out and see them get the gold.
It's great. Yeah, I stayed up. I went to bed at 2:30 a.m. in New York. Well worth the tired eyes today. I've seen, let me count, about three of those games live, gold medal games, in Vancouver, in Sochi. I want to say maybe Turin, check my math on that. And the games, being at the arena, the intensity and the level of sort of energy and tension is just unbelievable. So I can only imagine what it was like to be there last night. And I thought the Americans were the better team, but I have to admit, just having seen this time and time again, I thought Canada was going to score late in the third and win. I'd seen that before. They're a very, very good third period team. They seem to have had the Americans' numbers in the Olympics. Then when you watch the overtimes, clearly the Americans were better. They had fresher legs. 4-4 is a better game for them. And so my thought was after the overtime period, I thought they would win. As great as that Canadian goaltender played, I thought they were the better team from overtime on.
What's the atmosphere like at those games since you've covered it? What is the atmosphere? Because right now it's hard to tell. On television, in some cases, Richard, I've been disappointed. I look at some of these events and, you know, the venues, and I'm thinking, where is everybody?
Yeah, you got to keep in mind, the games in South Korea, the South Koreans aren't in the gold medal game. If there aren't a lot of Americans and Canadians traveling, you're not going to get the same kind of arena energy as you would for, you know, a Vancouver Olympics or an Olympics where a lot of Americans or Canadians have traveled. In South Korea, clearly, you didn't see a lot of North Americans travel for these Olympics. That said, you know, if you were sitting where I was in the press section, which is very close a lot of times to the U.S. athletes or the Canadian athletes who show up to cheer on their fellow teammates, it's really intense. And you just, even if the atmosphere isn't like, you know, 50,000 people screaming, the tension on the ice is so great because you really do feel like every possession matters. If you have any sense of women's hockey, you understand that these players essentially are training for one game. Unless something catastrophic happens, the U.S. and Canada are going to get to the finals. There's essentially only one other team I would even give like a puncher's chance of beating either team, and that's Finland. But Finland can't really score. They have the best goalie in the world, I would argue, but they can't really score with the Americans and Canadians. So just imagine, like, you basically train 4 years for one game, and you always feel, at least I did, I always felt the tension when I was there. And then, you know, and again, this is not something that viewers are going to see, but covering it, you get to see the players after the on-ice ceremony, after the game, and the U.S. players, every time I've interviewed, I mean, I'm not sure I've seen more devastated athletes over the last couple of Olympics, and that's really where it sort of just speaks to how much energy and how much time and preparation they've put into this singular game, and they've, generally speaking, lost it in heartbreaking fashion. If you remember 4 years ago, what I think maybe a minute and 30 left or a minute 45 left, there was a U.S. defenseman, Kelly Stack. Canadians had pulled their goalie. She cleared it. She was a defenseman, cleared it from U.S. lane to the ice. It hit the post. Literally 1 inch to the right, tucks in, game over. You know, those U.S. women are famous forever. And probably their lives change in terms of endorsements, in terms of opportunities. So that's just how close the series has been. And, you know, if you believe in karma a little bit, it seemed like the Americans were due, and they got one last night. Incredible move to win it in the shootout. That's going to be a replay, I think, that we see for a long time.
Yeah, I heard the crowd described last night as one-third American, one-third Canadian, and one-third South Koreans trying to figure out why everybody in the arena was about to have a heart attack.
Right, yeah. That's good. By the way, you know, conversely, this is why the Olympics are great. If you are in Pyeongchang and you go to a short track speed skating, the place will be nuts. I mean, if you think like Predators in the conference finals is loud, like that's going to be insane. So that's sort of the beauty of the Olympics, is each of the countries have their sport that they really, really care about. You know, when I was in Sochi, I was pretty fortunate. I saw Russia play Canada, in talking about the men's, in the round robin. So, you know, the men's hockey tournament in Sochi was really, really important to the Russians. Ovechkin's face was basically everywhere on every poster at the airport I landed. I mean, it was essentially the face of the games for them. And so, you know, you want to talk about tension and just, like, you know, a little bit of menace in the air. Like, that was just fascinating to be. And I was sitting in the crowd. I wasn't covering that. I happened to get a seat from one of my bosses. And so that's always what's interesting to me about the Olympics is, like, depending on what country you're in, they all have a sport that they favor, or they all have a sport that their fans are really obsessed by. And if you could somehow get tickets to that's like an experience you'll never forget.
Richard, another longtime guy. I feel like we've talked a lot to you over the last couple of years about longtime broadcasters leaving the booth, and it came to a close, at least on ESPN, for Mike Patrick last night. He was a part of the broadcast at Duke, Louisville, and Duke basketball game. He did his last football game was on December 30th, which happened to be a bowl game the Memphis Tigers were involved in. But a 35-year run has come to an end. Do you think he's truly done, and what do you think about Mike Patrick as a whole?
I honestly don't know if he's done. Usually, unless it's health reasons, these guys want to keep going on. So we'll see with that. You know, I'm trying to be very honest with your audience all the time. Mike Patrick had a great longevity in his career. He had some incredible assignments. He was not nearly close to one of the broadcasters I particularly like, whether he was working on Monday Night Football or even his Vital days. I honestly always found him to be an absolute cheerleader for the establishment. Never really a guy who called anything out. Great voice, obviously, very good down and distance, but it's not one of my, you know, the guys who I think about sort of like who I always will have reverence for, the Vern Lundquist, you know, Keith Jackson and Scully and Mike Emmerich. Mike Patrick's not in that department to me. That said, you have a 35-year career where you did Monday Night Football, You did ESPN's number one college basketball games. You did college football at the highest level. That's a great career. So
women's Final Fours.
You know, all props to him on that. But it, honestly, not one of my guys. I always sort of found him to be a little bit too much of part of the establishment. But that, you know, that's probably my punk rock roots coming through. So it's probably more on me than Mike Patrick.
Visiting with Richard Deitch here on Darren and Donick. Richard, sticking in the broadcasting realm, ESPN announced that Kirk Herbstreit is going to sort of step in and take over the John Gruden role in part of their NFL draft coverage coming up in late April. What do you think about that move, first of all, and maybe more importantly to a lot of football fans out there, where does the Gruden role moving forward stand now? Who's the most likely guy to step into that mix on Monday Night Football?
Well, I'm just going to make the assumption that Kirk Herbstreit is going to demand that Johnny Manziel is drafted number one if he's going to follow the Gruden footsteps. That should be fun for the draft coverage. This is a massive upgrade to me. Quite frankly, anybody on this call, in my opinion, would be a massive upgrade from John Gruden in the draft. While he absolutely knew the quarterbacks that he worked with in QB camp, Gruden falls in love too much with players, and I think you saw that on the draft coverage, you know, especially the quarterbacks. Too many quarterbacks for John Gruden when they were coming up were, you know, the next fill-in-the-blank Hall of Famer. And so I think Herbstreit, because he sees the college game, I think he'll be an interesting voice there. He's also a guy who shares the mic really well, so I think he'll let guys like Lewis Riddick and Mel Kiper, McShay, these are really the stars of that draft, shine. So I think he'll be an interesting voice, and I think that was I had not heard that before it was announced. I think that's an interesting move by ESPN. It's not always a place that does interesting moves. I actually find that interesting. In terms of Monday Night Football, you know, you guys might have seen the Post report, New York Post report not too long ago about Peyton Manning. I have no doubt that ESPN has reached out to Manning's officials by now. One of their executives told me a month ago that they were planning to do that. I'm sure they've done that. I'm sure it's basically a blank check for Peyton. I can't see him taking a broadcasting job, and if he does take a broadcasting job, I think he would take the Fox job on Thursday night, far before the ESPN Monday Night Football. So I'll continue to say for Monday Night Football, I think they'll stay in-house. I think their best sort of cost-efficient play. So you're looking at a Matt Hasselbeck, a Randy Moss, sort of people in that kind of station. I don't expect it to be Rex Ryan. But that would be my guess. There's not anybody out there, you know, other than Peyton, who's like, you know, let's bring this guy in. It's a difference maker. It's not Bruce Arians, who might have a future in broadcasting, but I think he needs some reps. Joe Thomas, Browns offensive lineman, seems to be a really good prospect, and I think he could be really, really good one day. But that's, to me, asking a lot to put a guy who has no broadcasting experience nationally into a number one job. I mean, it worked with CBS for Romo, but, you know, they invested 9 months in that. And Romo's a quarterback, and it is different. He sees the whole field, where Joe Thomas only sees the field from his line position. So if I had to guess, I'm going to still stick with a combination of a Matt Hasselbeck and either a third person or Matt Hasselbeck solo.
Richard, I'll shill for your company here for a moment. The most interesting and perhaps alarming sports story I read this week was a real-life Animal House, John Wertheim, Jessica Luther with SI Now, on the state of disarray, frankly, and disorder in the Mavericks organization. What do you make of that story? And more importantly, should the fallout be for Mark Cuban and the Mavs moving forward off of this?
It's a good question. Two great reporters, by the way, and John Wertheim and Jessica Luther, and you know, they clearly had the goods. You saw Cuban's response. There was no denials. There was no "this is out of context," etc. He, you know, as the owner, he pretty much owned it. The question, of course, is going to be what did he know, and when did he know it, and what should the NBA do about it? I think the NBA has to hold its own independent investigation away from the Mavericks, and I think they have to come up with some kind of findings as to how bad that culture was. If you read the story, it's bad. You know, you wonder how much else maybe the reporters didn't find. What I don't know, and this is where you'd have to have somebody who's in more of an NBA expert or a legal expert than me, is what's the precedent for punishment? Obviously, we saw the precedent with Donald Sterling, but that was, you know, a 20, 30-year history, and the NBA Board of Governors essentially forced him to leave his franchise. That's not going to happen with Cuban, I don't think. But, you know, is there a monetary fine that sort of can be equaled here? Do you take draft picks away from the Mavs? That, I don't know the answer to that, but that's a very interesting question to me, is if the NBA finds that there was some systematic sexual harassment and a horrible workplace culture for the Mavericks, what is a fair punishment for them?
And it seems like all the reports, everything you read, and you're right. Thanks for bringing that up, Steve. Great work by you guys, Richard. This was a culture that was there to, set up to protect him. I mean, it was doing just the opposite. You're supposed to be protecting alleged victims, and it looked like everything was a cover-up to protect his behavior over the years in Dallas, which
was pathetic. I don't want a Monday morning court. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I don't want a Monday morning quarterback this, and it's certainly, I've done no reporting on this. I don't get any credit here. But it's a little hard to swallow. And this is not necessarily just blaming Cuban directly, but it's hard to swallow that a guy like that, the GM of the franchise, could have been running roughshod on people for that long and nothing had been done about it. It makes you think that this is happening in other organizations, probably in sports. And, you know, when you have – and this happens at all companies, but I'm glad that Wertheim and Luther really exposed this. When the human the HR department is not working for you, but they're working for the bosses, that's a really bad and scary company to be at.
Yes.
That's supposed to be the place in the company where you could confidentially let them know things that are happening with you as an employee, particularly if there are things going on that are criminal or harassment or whatever. And it was very clear that the Mavericks had a setup led by that GM where he had an HR person who wasn't doing any kind of due diligence for the employees. He was essentially covering up and enabling this general manager's behavior. Then you take the Mavericks, like, .com writer. I mean, that's just not doing your job in terms of background checks and stuff.
That's
how
insane.
That guy, it is. That's one where, I mean, it's hard to take Cuban's explanation. In the end, the buck stops with him. How do you not do some kind of rudimentary background check on employees like that? And then when you find something, how do you bring them back? If there's any positive to this story, and maybe there isn't, but if there's any positive, I have immense respect for how the Mavericks players have come out and not try to, like, circle the wagons and say, you know, everybody's against us, which we see so often in college football and college basketball towns when we read these kind of stories. You know, people like Nowitzki are like, this disgusts me. This has to be cleaned up. That's good. That's really taking ownership where, you know, you see stories of this happening in colleges across the country, and what is the first thing the fan base and other people in the athletic department do? It's less about what's cleaning up and more about the media is wrong, the media is out to get us, this is a witch hunt. So I give the Mavericks players a lot of credit. I feel like they've at least said the right things.
Well, they've had a lot of time to think about it since they're tanking, right?
It's true. Which, yeah, they're not going anywhere. But I'll tell you, and again, this might be just something for you guys to get a guest on. I'd be really interested to hear from a legal expert who has, like, NBA knowledge and background. Like, what could legitimately be the penalty for the Mavericks? That's very interesting to me. And that's where we're eventually going to be heading down the road.
Richard, really good stuff as always. Have a great rest of your week and a good weekend. We'll do it again next week.
You got it. See you guys.
Go check out his stuff on Sports Illustrated. He's the author of The Media Circus. Richard Deitch will come back with a lot more next on 102.5 The Game. Messy stories out there right now, Steve. You know, we just touched on it at the very end with Richard Deitch. This Dallas Mavericks story is just shameful. It is
totally disturbing.
Unbelievable. By the way, this culture that had been going on for, looks like, a long time with their then, not anymore, their former president and CEO, was his last name Ussery?
Ussery.
Who was described by people who work there as a serial sexual harasser.
It's unbelievable.
I would say that is, like, the worst label anybody could put. I mean, serial sexual harasser, who evidently, if you read these accounts, just terrorized tons of female employees for more than a decade. and nothing was done. And going back to what we were talking about, that's what was what stood out to me when reading about this, is how HR is supposed to be the protector, right? That's supposed to be in every workplace, your protector. That's your safe place. That's the safe house. And they couldn't even go there and feel safe. They were protecting Ussery.
Well, it's why it's terrifying when anybody in a position of power, and we see this all the time now, abuse that power and use that influence over people to try to get what they want. And that is terrifying for sure. One of the things that is equally as alarming to me is they have this guy, Earl Sneed, who is their Mavs.com beat reporter.
And again, another former.
Right. Who was arrested and charged, at least. I don't know if he's been convicted at this point, but with domestic violence charges.
Twice.
Twice. But he was one time, and police even had to come to the team facility at some point. Like, think about that. If police show up at your office at some point, doesn't everybody take note of that, including the bosses?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here? That happened there. It was so bad for him, he wasn't allowed to leave the country and go on a trip with them to Canada. He couldn't even do the job when they had to go play the Raptors in Toronto. And yet the team did nothing there. And then he comes back and does something like that again. I don't understand how you can be that asleep at the wheel. And Mark Cuban, who is a bright guy, who inserts himself into sort of every topic of conversation that we have going right now, for him to not be that involved or to insert himself into things that are this important within his organization, I don't know, man. And Richard brought up the Donald Sterling thing, obviously the Clippers owner who had a long history of things that were racist, bottom line, racist things in his past. But ultimately what got him was an illegally recorded private conversation in his own home that got released by a mistress or girlfriend or something like that. That's ultimately what did him in. Those are words. Those are words in a private conversation that led to something there. This is inaction in things that are illegal in nature and an entire workplace environment that is actually harmful in some cases physically towards people. To me, there's no comparison between those two things. Both are bad. But I think this Cuban and Mavericks thing is considerably worse on the spectrum.
You know what I feel like we're living right now? I feel like we're going back to 1998 in baseball. I feel like we're all starting to learn. Like, it's all coming together now. Like, oh, I saw all these things in lockers. I saw all these things going on in the locker room. But I didn't realize what that meant at the time. And then we all start learning about PEDs and steroids and creams and flax oil seed and all the other stuff. Later on we learn about deer antler spray. But I feel like we're watching the home run race. When it comes to sexual harassment right now, when you just think about the culture – by the way, Ussery – was just let go 3 years ago. He was hired in 97.
Right.
So can you imagine really what the alleged account
probably. Almost a 20-year tenure.
When he's labeled a serial sexual harasser. When we just came from this Michigan State story, what, 20 years? Have we been sitting here asleep at the wheel for the last couple of decades with this stuff?
Yeah. I mean.
And we're now.
I think obviously the answer is yeah. I mean, I think a big part of it is you want to believe the people you're around are good people. And so unless it actually happens to you, I think you tend to want to step back from it. And I think what we're all realizing now is when you see something that's inappropriate, it's not good enough to say, this isn't me, or like I'm not part of the problem, so I'm just going to kind of go hide in the corner. When you see something, you have to step up for people, and you have to report things. You have to talk about what you see.
But if you can't do that and keep your job, I mean, this is what was going on.
Oh, sure.
These people.
That's an entirely different problem.
This is like it was job security. It was like, if I say anything, I'm going to lose my job. I can't win. Human resources is protecting. the president and the CEO. There is no place to go. If I say anything, I'm out. I'm out of a job. I mean, my goodness, that is not the way you run a workplace environment. That is not how it's supposed to be set up. And yet we are hearing cases now. Oh, we keep now getting these gigantic stories. And what is so alarming, Steve, is this is not isolated. It's not it's not this one case, this one particular isolated employee. No, who knows what the number's going to end up being with Ussery?
Well,
it's kind of like when it started with Larry Nassar, right? It starts with a couple.
Or Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah,
it starts with one or two.
And then we're talking about hundreds. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the same isn't held true with this Mavericks story. This is just unbelievable. And I feel like I'm going back 20 years to the steroid era where we're all kind of waking up going, oh, I get it now. You know, remember Mark McGwire?
Sure.
He openly had that stuff just sitting in his locker.
He used to talk about how Andrew Steen was like, you know, the secret ingredient. And Andrew Steen wasn't one of the drugs that was on the banned list by any means. That's why it was so openly in his locker and he talked about it. But, you know, he basically was the poster boy to going to GNC and getting all the supplements humanly possible to go into the gym and bulk up. So I guess the one thing maybe to your comparison that we can hope from all this 20 years later in a different arena in sports is I think 1998, in the period you're talking, was our great awakening to that. And it ultimately led to cleaning up the sport of baseball and changing the game. Hopefully this is our great awakening as a society to pay attention to this stuff.
Well, I mean, do these stories have to go to Congress before we finally get it cleaned up?
Let's hope not.
I mean, that's what baseball had to do.
Let's hope not.
Is Michigan State and the Mavericks and whoever's next, do they need to start going in front of Congress? I mean, what in the world? This is just unbelievable to me to read this story. So what do you do if you're the league? What do you do? How do you handle this?
See, that's my whole point about the Sterling thing. And, you know, I'm not trying to make the pitch necessarily that Mark Cuban has to give up the Mavericks. But what Donald Sterling ultimately lost the Clippers for was an illegally tape-recorded conversation that was private away from any team facility. That is what led to him losing the Clippers. This is something that is an organizational structure where the owner, who's involved with everything in and outside of his organization, just is apparently asleep at the wheel in terms of what's going on there and the culture that's under him. I'm not saying he established the culture, but he sits on top of it throughout that entire time. He's very involved. And to just not know that it's going on, and when you see things like police showing up at the workplace and you're not asking the appropriate question. Hey, why does our beat reporter, why can't he travel with the team to Canada? When you're not asking those questions, you don't do anything, and then more things happen. To me, I mean, they're all bad. Sterling and now this Mavericks thing, they're all bad. You know, you're not defending one saying one's good. They're all bad. But on the scale of bad, one is words, and the other one is something that physically hurt people within your work environment.
With no protection.
What does that mean to you? You know, if you're the league, I think you have to do something, and I think it has to be pretty severe here.
And what I'm tired of is what Rick Pitino has done and others. I'm not going to just single him out, but others have tried to do this. And really, I think to a certain degree, Mark Cuban was trying to do. I'm tired of people in power, people in control, people that are running things saying, well, I didn't know.
Right.
Well, guess what? That's not acceptable. That's not a good enough answer. If you're in charge and if you are overseeing something, it is your job to know. Simply saying, I didn't know what was going on behind my back doesn't work. For example, Mark Cuban, in the article in Sports Illustrated, he basically was denying all knowledge of Ussery's and Sneed's behavior because he was saying, you know, well, rarely was I ever present daily, you know, the business day-to-day operations. In other words, I wasn't around much. You know, I had people in place to run my business. I wasn't around much. Well, guess what? Sorry, that just doesn't work. Rick Pitino, well, I didn't know they had strippers. I mean, what was I supposed to do? These guys went rogue. No, but one, nobody believes that. But even if they did, it's your job to know. We have got to stop this. I didn't know, so therefore, excuse me.
The buck stops with you when you're the owner, when you're the president, when you're the CEO. The buck stops with you, ultimately, in these instances. And, you know, that's the bottom line with them. The one thing I will give credit to Cuban on, if you want to call it that here, is once this story came out, he's done the opposite of Patino. And he's actually sort of stepped up to the plate and said what went on here was completely inexcusable. And the buck does stop with me in my organization. Now, whether that's because that's completely what he feels or because he knows he can't say anything else because the reporting's too good and the facts are what they are, I don't know. But he's at least coming out and saying that because the facts are what they are against Patino, too. And Patino's going to his grave saying, I had no idea. This isn't on me. This is a rogue assistant. Don't blame the kids. Don't blame me. Don't blame the school. This is all an isolated person or individuals that did this. Cuban at least is now coming out and saying, this was completely inexcusable. It's my organization. The buck stops with me. So I will give him credit for that.
When we come back, there was also a story down in Starkville that really went under the radar. We'll touch on that and wrap up the second hour. You're listening to 102.5 The Game, but first, let me talk to you about weight loss management. It's an ever-increasing field out there that's full of empty promises and yo-yo dieting and dangerous diet supplements, right? We've all been down that road as adults, and at Cool Springs MD, they provide a safe and effective management solution with the support of a physician, Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, his wife Daphne Lodge, the registered nurse. They've been helping folks here in Middle Tennessee become healthier and happier for over 20 years. Every individual is different. They know that. Their professional staff at Cool Springs MD, they're passionate about giving each and every one of you the one-on-one attention that you deserve. Take a tour of the facility today. Meet with their on-site trainers and counselors. Learn more about weight loss management. Find out your options and how to achieve a healthy lifestyle by calling the folks at Cool Springs MD and making an appointment. The number, 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. You can always go to their website for all details, everything about them. It's CoolSpringsMD.com. Back here at Bridgestone Arena, Jack Daniels Barrelhouse, Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. Willie Donick has made his way over to the desk. It looks like from morning skate that Pecorine will go for win number 300 tonight. Career win.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. And it's against a team that's playing some pretty good hockey right now. So this yep. is going to be a really good game tonight, I think. And Pecorine is going to have to play well if he's going to earn number 300. And I can't wait to see it. There's been some really good games he's played against the Sharks, especially in this building. His numbers against the Sharks are outstanding, but the one loss record is not outstanding. They've lost a lot of tough pitcher's duels, if you will, in San Jose. San Jose can get really stingy defensively, especially in their building. So they've got a confident Sharks team coming in here tonight, but I know the guys are going to really be – I think they'll be aware. They're aware of the 299. They want to get Peck at number 300 tonight.
Let's go to Jim, who wants to weigh in on our previous discussion. Jim, what's up?
Yeah, I was going to just weigh in on the Mark Cuban. You guys were the whole Mavericks deal. You guys are kind of amazed that this stuff goes on. And to me – as someone who loves our country, not saying you guys don't, but you look at the morals of our country, how is everybody amazed? Pornography is everywhere. You know, you can see pornography anywhere on TV, and you wonder why, oh, guys are going around molesting kids and stuff, but yet we feed them porn on TV. These guys, the morals of our country are a wreck. So I don't understand why people are so
But Jim, that's
amazed.
Been around for a long time. You act like that's just started.
You couldn't as a kid get on the internet when we grew up and see what these kids can see today. It's disgusting.
Yeah, but that whole world, that underbelly stuff, that's been out there for a long time. I mean, they have brothels. Over 100 years ago. I mean, that stuff
it's not, was... It's not, yeah, brothels, but not the internet throwing it in your face all day. People are going to jail for saying the pledge in schools and praying. I mean, what are you talking about? Oh, this is crazy. This is what's happening now. It's it's going to get worse. The morals of our country are shot. Everybody needs to wake up and see it.
Well, I hope not. Jim, thanks for the phone call. I hope that it's not going to get worse. It already feels.
Feels bad enough,
yeah.
For sure. He does, I think, have a point in that it's pervasive now. It's not that the things that are out there are any worse than they were 20 or 30 years ago. It's that you can find it all literally at your fingertips. And
it's
easier to access, yeah, all of that stuff. And when you can access it all the time, it becomes the norm, which is scary.
Speaking of, I said something happened down in Starkville. It's kind of really flown under the radar, but it hasn't in baseball circles.
No.
Have you guys seen this Mississippi State story?
What have they found out? Have they come up with the reason?
Other than Andy Canizero was their coach. He resigned a couple of days ago.
Right.
Last year was his first year as the Mississippi State coach. He's an up-and-comer. Everybody glows about this guy. They went to the Super Regionals. The sky was the limit on this cat. And, you know, the SEC baseball landscape is huge. We know it's the best conference in America.
And Mississippi State cares about as much as anybody.
Well, they're awesome. Building a it's about to be unveiled next month, and they're building it. They have built a $55 million state-of-the-art facility, which some are saying may be the best in the country.
And
it's supposed to open up next month. That's why they've been on the road. And he comes out a couple of days ago and said that he's made some poor decisions and he's resigning. And as everybody was, what?
Yep.
Which led everybody to speculate what that means.
I would say you have to make more than one really poor decision to step down in the middle of the season. Something came out. Something has come to light in a hurry.
Well, I certainly have done no reporting on this, but the rumors, which I won't necessarily say, but maybe will come to light at some point, fall in line with a lot of the things we said. And it may be one bad choice, but it's a really bad choice within the organization, if what people have said or speculated on. And, I mean, that's just the thing. It's another example of a person in power sort of misusing their power and not taking care, not being a good shepherd, not being a good leader of a program.
Married, kids, got a family at home. Like I said, a rising star.
Rising star.
Everybody has been praising Mississippi State over this hire. Like, watch out. Mississippi State baseball is going to be really good for a long time. Canizero, where did he come from? Did he spend some time with the Yankees for a while?
He came from LSU. He was,
right,
I believe, their hitting
that,
coach.
Wasn't he in MLB?
Well, he was a star at Tulane as a player. I think he might have been in the big league system for a while. I don't know exactly where. But, yeah, he was an assistant at LSU before he went to Mississippi State.
And then just
– Yeah, he did spend time with the Yankees as a scout and as a player and for the Rays.
For a while, I think.
Yeah, he played for the Yankees in 2006 and for the Rays in 2008. Spent 5 years as a scout with the Yankees before joining Paul Maneri down at LSU on his staff. And then, of course, John Cohen retires, takes the AD job at Mississippi State. He gets elevated as a head coach.
But what a strange story just to come out on Tuesday morning and say, hey, I unfortunately have to resign. I've made some poor decisions. Thank you.
Well, and that's another example of whatever they have, whatever they know, it's pretty universally agreed upon for the coach to say, yep.
Red-handed.
Yeah, you caught me.
Just go away
quietly.
That tells
you what's going on here. And that is what they're just hoping it disappears. They're hoping that this is basketball season. Nobody's really going to talk about it. They're going to have the pitching coach for the rest of the year, and they'll try and move on from this. But it's another really black eye for the sports world.
Right, well, it's now Kentucky's former head coach. So if there's going to be a situation where you have scandal and you have to elevate a head coach, well, at least somebody who's coaching this league.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. The interim could be a worst-case scenario. I mean, it could be a lot worse. But who is it, Gary Henderson?
Yep.
He's the one who's taken over as the interim coach?
Yep.
Man, I saw that. I could not believe, especially with just all the hype around this guy. I mean, we're very biased. We think Tim Corbin. I think Tim Corbin's the best coach in the country. I think Vanderbilt is – you stack them up against anybody in the country, especially with the longevity that Tim Corbin – but certainly people have had an eye on Cannizzaro and Mississippi State because of what he did last year in his first year, them building this new stadium. Like I said, they put – I think it was $55 million into a baseball stadium.
Yep.
And some were saying could be the best one in the country in Starkville, Mississippi. So that's how much they thought of this guy. And everybody was saying, you know, watch out. He's going to be there a long time, and he's going to be really successful. And then, boom, this week in – what, how many games are they in? Are they about, what, five?
Well, they had only played three games this past week, and they got swept. And after three games, he only coached, what, 40, like about 60 games in his career, and they got rid of him.
Yeah, 40-27 last year, 0-3 this year. It's amazing when you look at it that college athletics, and if you're a parent and you have kids and you want them involved in athletics – it's a great thing. There's so much you can learn from it. But when you send them off to play college athletics, you're counting on these coaches to essentially be like parent-type figures away from home for you. And to not just be great coaches, but to be great mentors and help your son or daughter grow up to be a great young man or great young woman during their time there. And more often than not, college coaches do that. More often than not, college coaches are Tim Corbin.
Tim and Maggie Corbin do.
Have incredible atmospheres for their players,
yep,
who become men when they walk on campus and go through that program, and they become better people in society. But then you hear these stories about Patino or Cannizzaro or whatever, and you realize that they're not all like that.
Steve, really appreciate it, as always. See you next week.
You bet, guys. Go get one for us tonight.
Steve Lehman, we'll do our best. Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. We'll come back. Speaking of, we'll bring Adam Vingan into the fold. He will join us at the desk. We'll talk about tonight's matchup, trading deadline, and a lot more to kick off the third hour. But first, Willie, you got a word about Lee Company.
All right, let me tell you about Lee Company. 567-1000 is the phone number to remember. And, of course, with the weather going to turn warm here soon, this is the prime time of the year, this next coming month. Yeah, we're going to have some cold spells here, but soon, around the corner, the air conditioning unit is going to be a very important tool that you need to have working efficiently. So get your air conditioning unit checked before the weather gets warm, because then, if something goes wrong, now you're in a crisis situation. You don't want that. Do the preventative maintenance thing. Call 567-1000, ask for Lee Company, have them come on out to your home, check out the air conditioning, make sure it's working properly. And while you're at it, get on their home maintenance plan, because then you'll have annual checkups. They'll be calling you to make sure you stay on schedule and make sure everything's working. And if you do need repairs, at that point, if you're a member of the home maintenance plan, you get discounts on the repairs. Lee Company, 567-1000, or go online at leecompany.com. They're a proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators. If you're coming to the game tonight, look for their display up in the club level. Outstanding stuff, and you'll see it all around Bridgestone Arena. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.